I cannot let fear paralyze me, right? I think it would be a disservice for my parents who sacrificed so much to allow that.
This is Hispanic Heritage Month, but celebrations feel a little different this year. Welcome to Carolina Connection. I'm Maddie Policastro.
And I'm Raina Drake. Also this week, some campus organizations fear losing their identities because UNC has banned DEI. Coffee houses are taking a financial hit due to President Trump's tariffs. Nature and art are coming together this fall at the North Carolina Botanical Garden, and the Chapel Hill music scene gets jazzier.
Gives you a lot of like freedom musically and like expression. You can do a lot more. It's a lot more interesting. There's so much more substance there, and it makes each person a lot more unique in every aspect.
From the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media, this is Carolina Connection. Thank you for joining us. Hispanic Heritage Month is underway, and people at UNC are among those celebrating. However, with the Trump administration's immigration crackdown, this year's events are marked by both festivities and concern. Carolina Connection's Anthony Guerra Flores reports.
On an early sunny Friday afternoon, a multitude of student organizations, departments, vendors, and customers crowded at the pit full of music in celebration of Hispanic and Latinx Heritage Month.
Agua de pepino con limón! Con queso.
Marcela Torres Cervantes, Associate Director of the Carolina Latinx Center, gave out shirts, provided information to students, and enjoyed the wide variety of attendees celebrating Latinx culture. She said this was liberating.
I was raised here in North Carolina, and I feel like growing up, it was almost something that you shied away from. You didn't speak Spanish in public, you didn't want to have an accent. But as we've gotten older, we've been able to really shed that shame and just step into the light and really be celebrated. So the center's here 365 days of the year, but this month is really time to celebrate, is really just to be present and make sure that everyone knows that.
And many of the organizers attending the event agree with this sentiment. Amexcon, a Mexican-American nonprofit organization that focuses on celebrating culture and promoting empowerment, had a table at the pit. Co-president Issei Perez Hernandez says he's here to promote Latinx culture.
And while we're at a predominantly white institution, that doesn't take our culture and our traditions away from us. We are who we are, we represent who we represent, and we're happy that we can get to share that to everybody on this campus.
At another table, Yuri Gallegos, the social outreach chair for SUI, Students United for Immigrant Equality, was busy selling fruta picada to raise funds for SUI's DACA scholarship and proclaiming the importance of being seen.
Two DACA recipients will be able to receive this scholarship to be able to attend UNC, which is something that's really important to us. And being out here to me, especially under this Trump administration, basically telling them we're not afraid, we're still here, like you can't diminish our success, like Latinos, letting everyone know that we're here and we're not gonna be scared, and yeah.
However, rising concerns around immigration leaves members of the Latinx communities vulnerable. Joel, a green card holder and a student attending the event, says laws such as the Criminal Illegal Alien Enforcement Act, which requires North Carolina sheriffs to cooperate with ICE, are responsible for this. For his safety, he asked to only use his first name.
Hispanics aren't really welcomed in a lot of spaces anymore, as well as we're being ostracized in a lot of communities. So having the ability to show that even though legislation and rulings over court cases aren't in our favor, we're not going to let that deter us from being a community, being here, being loud, being proud of who we are and who we come from.
Josmel, director of the Carolina Latinx Center, says fear should not be the end for the Latinx communities, instead opting for a hopeful attitude.
I cannot let fear paralyze me, right? I think it would be a disservice for my parents who sacrificed so much to allow that. And so for me, it's how do we continue to galvanize and support one another and continue to move forward together.
And much of this hope turns to pride and establishment. The Carolina Latinx Center is a safe space for Latinx students and contains a room called La Sala, a purposeful room with a deliberate Spanish name.
La Sala is not by accident, right? It was intentionally called La Sala to invoke that sense of home, that sense of pride, right?
La Sala, which translates to the living room, is meant to evoke a sense of home, like being at Abuelita's house. It's a place where students with varying backgrounds and heritage can come together and learn through shared experiences. In Chapel Hill, I'm Anthony Guerra Flores.
It's been over a year since the UNC system eliminated its DEI policy. In its place is what the system calls an equality policy. One change redefined rules around campus organizations intended to create spaces for underrepresented groups. Liana Riyashi spoke with student leaders about how their organizations have been affected.
The annual report of equality detailed major changes at UNC Chapel Hill, including the renaming or elimination of over 60 DEI-related roles and the removal of DEI language from mission statements, curricula, and websites across campus. While these shifts are mainly at the institutional level, student organizations have also been affected. The diversity category was removed from the university calendar, and disclaimers were added to several university websites, emphasizing that student organizations are, quote, open to all. These changes show the broader effort to align student life with the university's new take on neutrality.
Do we get Ahnam Sahna?
Yeah.
Yes.
Many of the students in this Arabic 101 class are members of the Arabic Conversation Club, which students get extra credit for participating in. The club's Annika Herlant said that while there haven't been any changes in the group yet, she's thinking they may need to frame themselves differently.
I think there may be, in terms of funding, less of a focus on the cultural activities and cultural understanding things. So maybe more shifting towards an impersonal view of language as a tool rather than as something that links people together.
UNC Chapel Hill's Equality Report stressed that student organizations need to open their membership to anybody who wants to join. But despite the concerns of some DEI critics, student leaders say groups on campus have always been open to everybody. Gabriela Del Rio is the treasurer of the Afro-Latina Student Association, a club that launched this semester.
I think we have definitely grounded ourselves in being a club for community and welcoming all people, and that's just something that, yeah, we're going to continue to advertise regardless of whatever restrictions may be apparent.
Sarah Haddix recognizes that there may be changes to her group. She's the co-director of the Association for Women in Math, a club with both academic and social events that create an inclusive space that they feel is hard to find in STEM departments. It has members of all genders, but she worries UNC's current policy might target the group.
And just what we've seen with the current administration and the way they're sort of indiscriminately, in my opinion, targeting what they might call DEI organizations, what I think will happen is they won't, you know, they won't care that we are open to all. They won't look into the specifics of our organization. They might just, you know, generalize. And
the other co-president of AWM, Dorian Varney, says cuts in DEI funding may narrow opportunities for women in math. The Equality Report noted that UNC's Women in Science of Data and Mathematics workshop was renamed to the more policy-compliant Workshop in Science of Data and Mathematics.
I think one of the biggest things that's been on my mind recently is the cut in research funding. There's already limited opportunities for math research, and not a lot of those positions are going to women.
It's important to remember, you know, whatever side you fall on with the whole DEI issue, is that these spaces, if they're put forward in good faith, they're meant to create community for those who have trouble finding it otherwise. It's always been about trying to help those who feel a little bit left behind. And I think that benefits everyone, not just the group it's targeting.
Haddix says it would be a shame if these spaces continue to change under the new policy, not just for her club, but for the campus as a whole. In Chapel Hill, I'm Liana Rieschi.
Despite their differences, one thing UNC students have in common is their dependence on coffee. The Trump administration's tariffs have sharply increased the cost of coffee for many parts of the world. Coffee shops and consumers are feeling the effects. Brooks Stevenson reports.
In the Chapel Hill Public Library, baristas from B3 prepare a wide variety of coffee orders. From lattes to cold brews, much of these beverages are made using B3's house blend.
Thank you.
Like many other coffee shops in Chapel Hill and across the nation, B3 has experienced the rising prices of coffee from tariffs. Jacqueline Boheeler is the co-founder and executive director of B3. Boheeler says tariffs on coffee have been a source of anxiety for B3 as a whole.
It just adds a layer of stress as a nonprofit that is striving to be accessible and to stay true to our mission of creating spaces where everyone belongs.
Comparing their invoices from this year and last year, the cost of B3's House Blend has gone up from $50 to $60. While tariffs have contributed to the rise in coffee prices, so have environmental factors. This past year, Brazil experienced severe droughts. Reuters reports that Brazil produces a third of all coffee used in the United States. Bohiler says balancing between being affordable and being a sustainable nonprofit has been challenging.
It presents an ethical dilemma for us on whether we need to rise our prices to kind of meet ends meet or take the hit. And right now we're basically taking the hit.
In Epilogue, a local coffee and bookstore in Chapel Hill, EMT Sofia Lacayo studies for the MCAT. Lacayo says coffee is very important in her everyday life.
So I would say I started drinking coffee around like 13 years old, and I can definitely say I am not a good person when I'm not drinking it in the morning.
She has also felt the effects of rising prices of coffee brought on by tariffs and hopes they will be lifted.
I think tariffs stink. I think a lot of people are on the same page as that. And so, would love if that was revoked.
This dilemma could change. Last week, four representatives introduced the No Coffee Tax Act to Congress. The bill, if passed, would rescind tariffs on coffee the Trump administration imposed this year. CNBC's analysis of the Consumer Price Index reports a 9.8% increase in U.S. inflation of coffee since April. Cody Morris is a senior economic research analyst for the Kenan Institute for Private Enterprise at UNC. Morris says a lot more companies are taking the hit from these tariffs to keep their customers.
There's a cost to changing prices. I mean, there's the physical labor costs of like the employees going to the shelf or going and changing the price, you know. But there's also just the cost of pushing consumers away. That's why a lot of companies have just been eating the cost of the tariffs across the board.
Morris also says that the effects of the No Coffee Tax Act could be immediate, but costs from tariffs might linger on coffee shops.
As soon as the bill's passed, whenever it's effective, if it's immediate, any coffee entering the U.S. at that point wouldn't be tariffed. But any coffee beans that they've already purchased and have been tariffed, they do have that cost.
Bohiler says that while she is hopeful this legislation will pass, she is also confident in B3's persistence over these rising costs.
B3 is very fortunate to not have many overhead expenses. We are in a free space at the Chapel Hill Public Library. We've been justifying not raising our prices just because of that resource.
While other coffee shops might be in less fortunate circumstances, the possibility of lower coffee prices could still be reality as Congress reviews the bill. In Chapel Hill, I'm Brooke Stevenson.
A former UNC provost has filed a lawsuit alleging, among other things, that the hiring of Bill Belichick was illegal. Chris Clemens, who left the provost's job in May, alleges the UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees violated the state open meetings law by making decisions behind closed doors. According to the lawsuit, that included the hiring of the head football coach and also tenure policies for professors. The North Carolina Open Meetings Law requires that all official meetings of public bodies be open to the public unless a specific statutory exemption applies. The suit claims the Board of Trustees improperly used the personnel exemption on the grounds that they were going to be discussing tenure candidates. But once the session closed, they discussed tenure as a policy. In a statement to Carolina Connection, Board Chair Malcolm Turner called the allegations disappointing and inaccurate, not to mention a waste of taxpayer dollars.
Time I make it right. Tell you what it is, say what you want from me. If you feel like this is where you're supposed to be. Love was something close to what you showed me.
You're listening to Carolina Connection, the weekly student newscast from UNC's Hussman School of Journalism and Media. I'm Raina Drake.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. If you're looking for live music that will keep you on your toes, there's a growing scene in Chapel Hill that might be just what you're looking for. The UNC Jazz Social Club is drawing crowds to Imbibe Cajun Restaurant on Henderson Street. Gracie Durham reports.
When you step into Imbibe for a jazz jam, you're seeing more than just musicians playing their instruments. The crowd eats, chats over drinks, plays cards, and some are even doing homework, all while the music fills the room. These jams are hosted a few Fridays each month by the UNC Jazz Social Club. UNC student Sophie Zuber started the club last year to create community among people with a shared love of jazz.
When I was in high school, we didn't have like a music program, and I knew nobody that liked jazz. So when I got to college, I was thinking, you know, I want to meet people who like jazz. And so, okay, like, I'm going to start a club.
The Jazz Social Club hosts its jazz jams at Imbibe Cajun Restaurant, and Zuber says it is open to anyone in the community.
The last jam, there was some older couples at Imbibe, and they ended up loving it. And so anyone who wants to go is more than welcome. We've had a couple faculty members come and play.
Vice President of the club, Luca Skinner, says the jazz jams have been very successful.
It's not a huge venue, but it's packed every time. Like, once you find a seat, you almost don't want to stand up because someone's going to take it.
Ty Mendenhall, a student who plays trumpet during jazz jams, says the venue Imbibe is a big part of creating the right atmosphere.
Now that we actually get to go to a New Orleans-themed bar and like a jazz bar, truly, we've kind of revitalized. And it's been great to have a space where people can not just like sit in an audience. You can kind of sit, get a drink, get a meal, play cards, do whatever, and the jazz is also there.
But what's at the heart of every jazz jam is improvisation. Improvisation means performing music spontaneously without preparation.
Gives you a lot of like freedom musically and like expression. You can do a lot more, it's a lot more interesting, there's so much more substance there, and it makes each person a lot more unique in every aspect.
Mendenhall agrees, saying this freedom of expression is an important part of jazz's origins.
Yeah, so originally jazz kind of had this sense that it was deviant and different and like against the status quo. And so it was kind of done with a little bit of anxiety and fear of like being cast out. It was very improvisational and experimental and was done in like these dark dives and bars.
Zuber says this emotion and improvisation are what make every jam different.
Improvisation is just you play what you feel, and you don't necessarily have to stick to the script, but you can, and it's still something new every time.
The Jazz Social Club aims to make jazz accessible to everyone. You don't need any prior knowledge about jazz to attend.
Everyone is welcome, and like, jazz is for everyone.
The next jazz jam is on October 10th at Imbibe. In Chapel Hill, I'm Gracie Durham.
Fall is always a colorful time at the North Carolina Botanical Gardens, and it's not just because of the leaves. For 37 years now, the Sculpture in the Garden exhibit has featured artists' work intertwined with the foliage and flora, focusing on the interconnectivity of nature and art. Carolina Connections' Marguerite Stuess strolls through the grounds.
This past Saturday, just off Old Mason Farm Road, the North Carolina Botanical Gardens kicked off their three-month event. Sculpture in the Garden features artists local to the Triangle and North Carolina. The free event invites people to explore the relationship between the natural world and art. The event was established in 1988 by Kathy Buck and director Ken Moore. Now, Emily Oglesby, the Communication and Exhibit Coordinator, plans and curates the event.
They run the gamut. Some of them are sort of like very serious and describing their overall artistic philosophy. Others are kind of whimsical, and maybe they've like written a poem to go along with their piece or something. So those are always fun because you kind of see a piece at a distance and then you get closer and you read the statement, and it might turn out that the artist had something completely different in mind.
Oglesby works with her team to sift through the entries, looking for pieces that are durable with strong craftsmanship. She then creates the layout of the sculptures throughout the garden. This past weekend, the event preview was held, where artists and locals were welcomed on the grounds to get a taste of the 64 submissions and purchase pieces. One piece stands over 8 feet tall, crafted out of welded steel and railroad ties. Others are nested in garden beds and made of more delicate materials such as clay and ceramic tile.
Last year was the first time I submitted, and I just love this show because it is so eclectic with how many artists there are, and the amazing talent that is in the triangle is really showcased here.
That is Stu Beavers, a local artist from Durham. Beavers submitted two life-size pieces, Scarlet the Red Fox and Jinx the Hare. Both pieces used 100% recycled material, including old farm equipment, scrap metal, and bike chains. The two pieces were made to accompany one another, a fox in search of its next meal. He attended the event preview with his wife, Sarah Schwartzer.
I have loved coming to this show, and it has been great to meet everyone, meet the community. Like, you start to recognize faces, and you're like, oh, hey, that's great. I love your piece this time, you know, and it's so much different media. There's all sorts of different types of pieces here.
Schwartzer and Beavers were able to view all the pieces and then cast their vote for the People's Choice Awards. This is an old-fashioned paper ballot that remains open through November 13th. The top three artists will win a cash prize. Pieces range in style, medium, and seriousness. Dee Dee Richardson, another returning artist, had a special goal in mind for the attendees who viewed her piece.
I made a piece called Funky Fish, and there are two sets of ceramic fish. And my goal is when people walk up, they laugh at them. And I've seen that happen, so I'm successful here.
Over the next 3 months, the landscapes of the garden will change with the art, allowing attendees to explore each piece again and again. Oglesby watches the changing flora from her office window on the garden grounds.
Sometimes I start to see a piece differently as time goes on. And we always tell people to come back and see the show multiple times. As you can imagine, the whole landscape changes. Like, by December, this is pretty much all brown. You know, the leaves are gone. The sculptures just, like, inhabit the space in a very different way.
Sculptures in the garden will remain open through December 7th, inviting people of all ages to enjoy sanctity and peace that accompanies the blooming plants and beautiful sculptures. In Chapel Hill, I'm Marguerite Stuess.
And even though it's summer, some students are still thinking about, oh, even though it's fall. Oh my god, okay. It's the last one I'm locking in, okay.
You got it.
And even though it's fall, so I'm so sorry, okay. Just give me like 2 seconds, okay. And even though it's fall, some students are still thinking about summer. The Summer I Turned Pretty, that is. The hit Amazon Prime series. Several scenes were filmed on UNC's campus, and students and alumni alike flocked to see where that happened. Emmy Berger reports.
Last week, The Summer I Turned Pretty's frenzy on campus came to a head with the showing of the season finale at the historic Varsity Theater. The event was the brainchild of UNC's Visitor Center, keeping the film set alive. Bella Hancock, a UNC senior, was one of the first to push past the beach-themed streamers into the event.
I think it's so cool how excited campus is about how the fact that it was filmed here and how much of campus was shown in the show. And that was one of my favorite things watching it back.
With a new episode from season 3 being released every week, high anticipation to see which Fisher brother main character Belly will end up with in the end was washed down with icy sodas and freshly popped popcorn, courtesy of Varsity Concessions. Super fans and casual viewers alike lined up to take part in the festivities.
My best friend back home in Atlanta is a big fan of The Summer I Turned Pretty, and all of my roommates have been keeping up with it. They kind of roped me into watching it with them a few weeks ago. So I've been watching it with them since then. I just wanted to come hang out and yell at Belly and her bad tasted men.
Izzy Deneka, UNC senior tour guide and leader of the Visitor Center's Summer I Turned Pretty campus tour, walked future students, parents, and alumni around campus to see the recognizable filming locations and where the cast spent time when not on set.
Within the span of less than 3 weeks, like, decided that it was happening, wrote a script, planned the tour route, did all of the promo, did everything to kind of get things running, and it was insane.
Deneka took me on my own tour, somewhat of a revival since the ticket sales closed in early September, showing me some more of the well-known filming locations.
Okay, next we're going to the inn. Okay, onwards. Perfect.
So we go to kind of all of the iconic campus locations where the show filmed, lots through McCorkle Place and at Old East and Old West, Old East being where Belly lived her first year, which is also where Jenny Han, the creator of the show, lived when she went to Carolina.
Deneka and the rest of the Visitor Center team have worked hard to combine the magic of the small screen with the energy of UNC's campus. While the tour is currently on a hiatus, the bright lights of Hollywood have found their way to Chapel Hill. In Chapel Hill, I'm Emmy Berger.
Thank you for listening to Carolina Connection. We are a production of the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. We hope you enjoyed your time with us. Our technical directors are Kevin Paris and Kalias Galbraith Fau DeCanto. I'm Raina Drake.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. There's more to be discovered at carolinaconnection.org. You can also find our stories on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to weekend programming on 97.9 The Hill.